The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Like the legend of the Phoenix, all ends with beginnings. What keeps the planet spinning? The force from the beginning.
Hey everybody, welcome to Reporting is Eligible. I'm Paul Noonan, write for Acme Packing Company and the Shepherd Express, and do the baseball podcast where I had to explain constitutional law. And it is the bye week. The Packers' regular season is over. They had their little skirmish against the Lions that they did not win, but who cares? And now they get to rest and watch the rest of the NFL beat themselves up while they sit at home twiddling their thumbs. So all is right with the world, and nobody got hurt, and we got lots of stuff to talk about in terms of the game and the preview of who we want and who we don't, and all kinds of other fun stuff. So to help me with that, joining me as always in urban Wauwatosa.
Hey, it's J.R. Radcliffe, trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Have we discussed, Paul, exactly what we're going to do next week? We don't have a theme in mind. We haven't had this conversation about how we're going to handle this this extra time off. We got to have an extra episode, right?
Yeah, I mean, we'll know who they're going to play by then, so we'll have a little something to talk about, but that doesn't take that much time. There won't be a game to talk about, you know. So yeah, we should probably come up with something, I suppose.
We're going to need something. We're going to need our listeners maybe to chip in or something with some ideas. We did the Bears thing earlier this year. We could certainly do something similar to that, but I don't know, man. It's how do we get revved up for do we rank like the greatest Packers playoff games or something? That's good. That's good for maybe the print thing that I do, but I don't know about a podcast for it.
Maybe. I feel like there, a lot of the really good stuff is kind of old at this point. They need to make a few more good memories. Yeah. Like even like the good ones, like the Janis double Hail Mary Arizona game. Like they lost that game. And there's a lot of bad losses even with the good plays. So yeah, I don't know. We'll think of something.
Was surprised. I looked at the playoff games in the Aaron Rodgers era. I think that's actually going to post on Wednesday. And I don't know, 11-9 just didn't strike me as what I thought. I guess I thought it would be just maybe a tinge better than that.
Yeah.
That's how it goes. And some of those losses obviously are crushing losses.
Yeah, part of this is the Packers have played so long that almost everybody is their enemy to some extent. And they have. But I was thinking, like, I was going to recommend in terms of my preferred teams, the Cardinals, who have been kind of cratering as the season ends. But the Packers don't play well with the Cardinals in the playoffs. That has not gone well for them for the most part. And you know, it's not this Cardinals team, it's like Kurt Warner and some other stuff. But I don't like losing to the Cardinals kind of sucks, even though I don't really care about the Cardinals. So I don't know, we'll get to that.
That's yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't be worried about the history there. History doesn't really tell us much about what's going on in this year's team. Also, it should be pointed out the Packers have had a lot of first round buys, therefore have not gotten the quote unquote easier opponents in the first round as often. So that's also part of that 11-9 ledger for the record.
Very true. A lot of selection bias into that. The bye can hurt your record by that virtue. I mean, the Bucks are probably going to beat this the tar out of the Eagles this week and get themselves a Tom Brady win, and the Packers don't get to play the Eagles.
I don't know, man.
maybe not. Maybe not. It's closer than it would have been six weeks ago, but still, I still think the Eagles are kind of the most fraudulent team here. So we'll see. Never know. Nobody's terrible. All right. So before we get to playoffs, should we go over the Lions a little bit?
We should point out that Matt, whom you could call Matub, is not here for real. He's not going to pop in here halfway through. Well, he might pop in halfway through, but he's not here as we speak these words.
I think he probably will pop in. Well, we'll see. So we should let's bet on it. Do you think Matt shows up or not?
No, I don't think he
shows up. I think he does. I have faith in Matt. We have no stakes on this, so it doesn't matter.
One of us wins this.
Yes, it's all for pride.
Yeah, right. Just like the Packers-Lions game.
Exactly.
Look at that.
Exactly like
segue.
The Packers-Lions game. good segue. I had nothing for it. Okay, so most important thing.
Yeah.
most important thing about that game. Nobody got hurt. They played with fire a little bit longer than they should have, trying to get the Devontae record. I thought that they would get that done just right quick and get everybody out and... That'd be all that happened there. But Aaron actually took a few shots in the first half that I think were unwarranted, and I think really wanted to be the person who delivered the Devontae record ball, which happened, but it was hard. The Lions were smart in this game. I give them a lot of credit for being really smart in a stupid game, because they clearly knew that they were going to force it to Devontae and just triple covered him. And, they broke out all the trick play. Like, I love the Lions game plan here. I would have loved to have been there for like pregame and warmups and stuff on their side of the fence. Like, all right, we're going to triple team Devontae. We're going to run 8 triple reverses. We're going to do fake punt on the first, no matter what, and we're going to win. And yeah, good plan. It worked really well. Kudos to him for it.
It was the perfect storm of a coach who knew he was going to be here next year. So he didn't have to, get any last resume building opportunity to save his job. They knew that that a loss probably didn't even hurt them, because they could have had the first overall pick in the NBA draft or NBA NFL draft. Not sure what the NBA draft will get you, but the NFL draft and they ended up losing that opportunity, but still, like, they just could not have had less to lose. And they emptied the playbook. So good on them. I agree with you that, I mean, I'm not going to like chastise them for keeping Devontae out there longer. I mean, I love records. I love that people want to chase them. I think they're cool when people do get them. I would say that this is not a record that people will particularly talk about. I think it was nice that when Sterling Sharp was atop, and that sort of gave us a reference point, but this is Devontae breaking his own record from a couple years ago with an extra game. So like that, this isn't like, we're going to remember this forever. In fact, I would wager that people forget about it before this year is over, that it actually happened. So
yeah,
that might've been a little weird, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure it just comes down to what Aaron Rodgers wanted to do, how much he wanted to play, how much he wanted to just like get out there and feel good. It seemed like he was having a good time. He was smiling at halftime when they were down at halftime. So you could tell he was relaxed out there. They didn't come away completely scot-free injury wise, because Marquez Valdes-Scantling left the game with an injury.
That is true.
So that could be a factor. I know he's not Kenny Clark level concern, but still he could be a factor.
He's definitely a factor, and it's worth noting that. It's just that he has been kind of ineffective and seemingly hurt for a while. So I almost view that as more of an aggravation. But you're right. Like he definitely impacts the game going forward. If they don't have their deep threat, it closes the playbook a little bit. And as rough of a season as he's had, it's nice to have all your horses. I mean, nobody wants a situation where we end up with Amari Rodgers running routes in a game, and they're not close to that, but every injury to a receiver brings them a little closer. So it's not nothing.
And David Bakhtiari got out there. So it is a net gain, if nothing else, getting Bakhtiari some reps before the playoffs. And he looks great. Definitely going to have him in the playoffs, right?
I think our much talked about theory that they just keep guys out until they're 100%, it really seems to be the case, because I think we all kind of worried, well, is he going to be the same David Bakhtiari? Is he going to move as smoothly as he did before? Is he going to be as fast and strong? He looked great in all facets of the game. He was bowling people over. Nobody was getting close to Aaron on his side. He looked absolutely fantastic, like he'd never gotten hurt in the first place. So that was good to see, a good tune-up. The Lions are as good a tune-up as you're going to get in the regular season for getting guys in shape, and it's good that he got some reps. And Josh Myers, too, by the same token. I'll be honest, I didn't watch center play at all, but he seemed to hold up fine and not get beaten. So that's all you want from your center, is to not have him mentioned on the broadcast in a prominent way.
Yeah, I'll be fascinated to know what they do. Do they go with Patrick, who is, you know, the lesser talent, but a guy who's been there the whole time? And I don't know. Maybe how Bakhtiari, you know, the comfort Bakhtiari has with the other guys at the line might be a factor there. But it would be nice to have a lot more strength on that line. If the Packers win the Super Bowl this year, Yosh Nijman deserves a tiny little his own place in the story of the 2021 Packers, because I can't believe that guy was in there as much as he was this year. And they didn't miss a beat, because he wasn't David Bakhtiari, but like the way they held it together, credit him, credit Adam Stenovich, Mercedes Lewis. I mean, there's a lot of heroes there, but I cannot believe they didn't have David Bakhtiari for almost the entire regular season and went 13-4. Like, yep. That's not something you could have predicted. So
it's
so
insane.
Incredible stuff.
It is testament both to Aaron Rodgers for how much he does help his offensive lineman out by his movement. And yeah, Yosh Nijman was fantastic in picking up the pieces there and getting better every week. And it is a little unfair, because with Bakhtiari back, he can't really bounce inside and play guard or anything like that. He is a tackle through and through. He's not going to see that much time. There are some other bigger, worser guys who probably would see, you know, a little bit more time based on that kind of effort, and he's just not one of them. But I think he's earned himself a place in somebody's future, if not the Packers, and, you know, they'll have him as a security blanket if anything happens to anybody else going forward. So that's good, too. He definitely deserves a ton of credits. He was absolutely great in backing up. And also, like, what a backup lineman should be. I feel like in the past, when the Packers have had line injuries, it's been like almost a sitcom. Like, you got Don Barclay, who just comes in and just completely shits the bed. Like, it's not like there's a you're supposed to have competent backups. That, like, your backups are supposed to come in and not get the crap kicked out of them and be okay. So I'm glad to have that. And not just sort of the normal Packer backups of how are you in the NFL playing this position?
Yeah, I mean, Barclay comes to mind, obviously, because he was the guy who was versatile and could play all those different positions. And
kind of.
And the question being, could he play any of them? Could he play any of them well? You know, like, I think, I don't know. I'm trying to think of other examples of backup linemen, good or bad, that they've had over the years. But Yosh Nijman being this like athletic freak is kind of the ideal. And it looks like the wager we made here at the beginning of the podcast, Paul, you're the big winner here. You're the one who said for sure Matt would be here. Matt,
I was waiting
for
Matt
is here.
I was waiting for the words to be said. So
you can use my full name if you feel like it, JR.
Well, so I'm fairly confident I can pronounce it, but I'm positive, you know, so I don't know. Matt Matanich is in the house.
That is correct. My name is Matt, but you can call me Matub, Acme Packing Company Meme Weaver, and general Twitter rabble rouser.
Do you have something going on with your microphone that you sound just a little bit deeper than normal? It's
you got like the thing where Bo Burnham does his bassy songs going on versus when he does
Get your fucking hands up.
That one.
Okay, I will join you gentlemen in a little bit.
Oh,
no!
Keep it!
The bet is live.
Isaac Hayes, this shit. Let's go!
Okay. I'll be back.
Okay. I kind of dig it. It's like having Matt possessed by Barry White on the show. So,
if Matt doesn't come back, I win.
You win the bet.
I win
the
bet. I just wanted to be clear.
That was amazing.
This does not count.
I would like the story.
That was really
funny. First of all, he's got a Matt can talk. He won't. It'll be boring. Matt got a new voice toy, and I'm pretty sure that's what that was. So he was talking about it.
Got it.
Which I like.
Get your fucking hands up.
I kind of want one too. So, not that I need to deepen this, but. Let's see.
All right. Did we praise Patrick Taylor yet? I haven't.
No, we did not. We did not praise Patrick Taylor.
Second week in a row. That guy's good, man.
He's good. He's just
good. He's small, but he's good.
They found another good running back who runs with good power, and they actually just seem to be good at this now. I know I've criticized the AJ Dillon pick a ton, but he's awesome. But this is kind of why, because Aaron Jones is a fifth round pick, and Patrick Taylor, I think, is a UDFA that I'm trying to frantically look up right now, and. You know, you can just find good running backs in a lot of different places. Maybe it helps to be the Packers and have their scouting department, but he's really good. He ran with power. He had a fantastic yards after contact number in this game. He gained like 35 of 51 yards after contact, so he was pulling off that kind of power running that we like to see. And I think also has a place in the future of this team, especially if Aaron Jones keeps getting dinged up like he sometimes does. I mean, as A.J. Dillon's backup, you couldn't ask for much more than what he's brought to the table. So it's really cool to see another running back kind of ascend.
I think it's worth still noting with the Dillon pick, the second round pick. And again, as always, when people bring this up, there's always a little bad faith here. It's not that, you know, running backs, it's not that you want bad running backs.
No,
it's that
no.
You don't want to waste capital because you can get good ones later. AJ Dillon, as good as they seem to have known that he could catch the ball, it just, that wasn't on tape at Boston College. So they either had just crazy inside intel where they said this guy could be a difference making running back in the NFL, especially catching passes, or they just took a guess. Yep. I mean, and good on them. They knew the scouting, but like, it's just not, it's not the move itself is the thing that you have to question, not actually the fact that, oh, they did happen to get a great player. That's so counterintuitive when we're talking about trying to improve your roster, but they were able to certainly make it pay off. And even the guy who got drafted after him, Josiah DeGuara, with a massive touchdown play in this game.
Also some good blocks, really laid wood a couple times. So Josiah DeGuara's touchdown was about half of Jordan Love's total yardage, and so he should send him a bouquet or something, because his line would be a lot uglier without. Oh no, my mouse is freezing up and Matt's trying to get back in. There we go.
I got him,
he's back.
Beautiful.
Yep,
beautiful.
Hopefully he sounds
Matt, speak to us.
Hopefully he sounds high pitched this
wants
time
us to wait.
Okay,
he's telling us to wait. Let's go, Matt. Oh, now he's muted.
No, he's muted. This is awesome.
Tremendous.
Tech trouble on the radio.
Great radio. There you are, Matt.
Okay, you're back.
I don't think I got it figured out.
Oh, no. You're definitely a deep voice for the rest of this podcast. I'm so excited.
I'm deep voice for the rest of it. So what did I miss?
Oh, appraising
what
people
did,
from...
What did I miss?
No, that's not the voice you want to go with when you're singing that song.
Well, this is going to be amazing. We've basically just been praising performances in the Lions game so far. So we just did Patrick Taylor.
It's been interesting.
Yeah. Do you have anything to say about Patrick Taylor with your awesome deep voice?
No, I want to talk about Alan Lazard. Did you already talk about
him? No, we haven't.
So let's talk about Alan Lazard. He got two tutties. Yeah. Should have had three if Roger stayed in the game. And everyone is now talking about Alan Lazard as the true wide receiver two that the Packers have needed for God knows how long. And we're over here taking a victory lap going, last year when he was leading the league in DVOA, we're like, Alan Lazard, wide receiver number two that we always wanted. Then he
got
a hernia.
Core muscle surgery, which is not good for you.
No, it is very bad for you.
Yeah, but, recovery time being what it is, he's had a great second half. And he started, the big change there is he started pulling in contested catches, which, you know, as a giant man, that is a good thing to be able to do. and it's turned his season around. So Alan Lazard has been a great complement to Devontae. You can't just leave him open. He will burn the heck out of you. And he had another great game where, you know, we mentioned this earlier. They were triple teaming Devontae to stop him from setting the record, because they knew they were going to try and set the record. So he made him pay. And that's exactly what you want him to do in the playoffs when people try and take away Devontae Adams. So good to see.
I didn't realize there was a newfound discourse around Alan Lazard suddenly being the number two. I feel like we've talked about him so much as that.
I know.
I live in the reporting is eligible world where it's like, Alan Lazard is an
of course
elite
Alan Lazard is good
when things are clicking. Of course he is.
By the way, guess where Alan Lazard guess where Alan Lazard managed to qualify for DVOA after kind of trailing the cutoffs for most of the season? Guess where he finished in DVOA among all wide receivers?
Top 10?
He's sixth.
Third.
Yeah. He finished sixth in DVOA.
Incredible.
Yep. Every year he's healthy, he's a top 10 receiver by DVOA. He's a third down machine, and he is super valuable to have.
Dude, DVOA loves converting third downs.
It does. That's kind of its thing on receivers. Like, if there's a guy that you think is overrated, that's why he's overrated. That's always been the case. It's actually pretty consistent. Some guys are actually good at it. I remember Bobby Engram used to be super good at it when he was on the Seahawks. They used to, on outsiders, call him the third down machine. And he did that his whole career and was always a much more valuable player than people thought because of it. So,
how big is Bobby Engram? Because intuitively, I would think guys who are bigger for short yardage passes would make sense as third down
I think
geniuses,
he's a
right?
tiny guy, but I'm not sure off the top of my
head. Yeah.
I think he's a slot receiver. Sometimes the slot guys are good at just kind of getting just past the line, and I think that's what he really did.
Sure. Yeah, like Devonta would be a good third down guy, mm-hmm. and also first and second and fourth and fifth down. Jordan Love, the evaluation on him is I still feel like we just don't have any data. Like, I know that we've got the reps now, but they challenge him to do so little. Like, you know, snap it, get rid of the ball. They're not
part of the problem, though. Is like, this is a meaningless game, and you're still calling like one read plays for him and get it out in 1 second plays for him. That is not great. Like, you should be testing him to make reads in this game, which they did a few times, which he failed. And if I think they had a little more confidence that he could execute the offense properly, they'd let him do it. and they don't. He put no good tape up in this game, like none. Even some of his play, like, people are saying he got screwed on, like, the pass to Tyler Davis, where Tyler Davis just dropped it. But that pass was not great. It was, like, this lollipop thing.
It was weird.
It was a weird pass. Like, it's not a
pass. It was high, and it was outside.
And it's not a pass
just,
that you would.
It was poorly placed.
It's not when you grade a quarterback highly for throwing. Like, it was a weird pass. He, like, shot putted it. And, yeah, Tyler Davis should have caught it. But, I mean, so what? It was bad. I'm unchanged here because people, like, everybody says, okay, we don't have that much data. All the caveats, like, he lost some development time to COVID. Totally true, he did. But just because of his status when they drafted him as a project, as a guy who, by that sort of label, you're sort of admitting not a great college stat guy, which he's not. He was not accurate. He threw a ton of interceptions. He's a pretty good but not great athletes. We should see some development at this point. His mechanics should look better. He should look more natural in the pocket. And he just looks like a robot out there every single time I see him, and this game did nothing to dissuade me from that opinion of him. So I need to see some actual improvement on the field tape-wise. Like, I can discount it if guys are dropping passes or if, you know, he had some pressure in his face. That's fine to not play well with pressure in your face. His underthrown ball to Equanimeous was because he had pressure in his face. But, like, he still looked bad. It just not good to see. They're going to have some tough decisions to make in the offseason, I think. I don't know.
speaking of the offseason, are we done with the game? Can we talk about how the Vikings and Bears cleaned house, or is there still? Did you want to talk about Amon-Ra St. Brown a little more?
Yeah, we should mention Amon-Ra St. Brown because, you know, the Lions have no good players except for him. So let's give him a little credit. He is Equanimeous's brother. He was the 17th receiver taken in the draft, and he's number.
Let's give him credit for being Equanimeous's brother.
Yeah, he finished the season as these. With the second most receptions among rookie wide receivers. He does not have good yards per target numbers, but he's been playing with Tim Boyle, the laser show, and Jared Goff in a crap offensive line all year. Catching 90 balls in this situation is amazing, and he looks good. Like, he gets open. He runs routes really well. I wish we had Amon-Ra St. Brown. So good pick, Lions, and good on him for being better than pretty much every other rookie wide receiver that's not Ja'Marr Chase and Jalen Waddle. So. That's impressive. Now we can talk about how shitty the rest of the division is.
Yeah, yes. Let's go.
Let's do it. Can we get the Vikings out of the way? Because the Bears, I think, warrant more attention. And the Vikings
are married to Kirk Cousins.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
They are. JR, do you know what Kirk Cousins' cap hit is next year?
Is it 45 mil?
Is 45 mil. Do you know what his cap hit would be if they cut him?
I'm going to guess 45 plus another 20?
No, it would just be 45.
Just 45. Oh, okay.
If they trade him, do you know what his cap hit is? It's 45
mil
again.
It's 45 million.
So they are literally forced to either pay Kirk Cousins $45 million or restructure and become married to him for longer.
Incredible.
Yep. They kind of have to extend him, and he should demand an extension because he's going to end up, he needs to make himself tradable, and he should get more money while he can. So do that, Kirk Cousins. Yeah, you have all the leverage.
I don't know, like, he could just take the guaranteed $45 million and be like, oh, my ankle.
fair points. I mean, I guess when you have $45 million, you don't really need any more money. That contract is amazing. I still can't believe they did it. I'm sure that Spielman's exit interview is probably, so here's Kirk Cousins' contract. we'll see you later.
What was it that Andrew Brandt said that he should like be in the Pro Business Hall of Fame or some Business Ball Hall of
Fame? Kirk Cousins? Yeah.
He's got his Business Hall of Fame are guys who did not perform but managed to make serious bank anyway.
Yep.
Joe Flacco.
Mm-hmm. He should absolutely.
Or even there's some smaller guys too. I would imagine Matt Flynn would be a candidate.
Matt Flynn, absolutely. Matt Flynn is first ballot, inner circle guy there. Just fantastic job.
Yeah. I still think Matt Flynn without tendonitis deserves that contract.
Maybe. But Matt Flynn had tendonitis.
Because his arm went to hell, and quarterbacks don't get Tommy John surgery.
Nope. The only thing I'll say about Mike Zimmer is I've seen a lot of Viking sniping in the background now that he's gone. I think we can say Mike Zimmer, good defensive coordinator, bad clubhouse guy. And there were other bad clubhouse guys on the Vikings like Kirk Cousins. But nobody seems to be coming to Zimmer's defense on the Vikings there. So maybe it was Mike's time to move on, and I'm sure he'll do fine coordinating a defense somewhere.
By nature of what I do for a living, I love coaches with candor. You know, we don't get a lot of them who want to share anything. Matt LaFleur, loved the guy, but he doesn't want to tell you a damn thing. But there is also a very small window where you can have candor before you cross into what did the coach just say? Like a guy, the line about Kellen Mond. Now, granted, Mike Zimmer knew what was coming. The axe was going to fall. But like when he was like, "Do you want to see Kellen Mond more?" Nope, because I see him in practice. Like the shade, highly unnecessary. Like Kellen Mond, like he might be the worst quarterback ever, but you don't need to be. He doesn't need to be catching strays. He's a third string quarterback.
I'm a big fan of like, well, we didn't want to play Kellen Mond because we didn't want to ruin his confidence. And then 10 minutes later, coach comes out and goes, that guy sucks.
Yeah. I mean, that's so not good. What a coach does in a well-oiled clubhouse. Yeah. Like that's tough.
Also, so, what pick was Kellen Mond?
Third rounder.
I thought he was second rounder.
No, he's a third rounder. Still. I just looked it up. He was same round as Sean Mannion, ironically. Who's also a third rounder just 5 years ago.
Actually, that's having seen Sean Mannion, I would say that's not ironic. That makes it sound like third round quarterbacks are just what they are.
Well, almost all third round quarterbacks are terrible. You get, you don't get Russell Wilson once in a while. You get him once. But wasn't Dak a third or was he a fourth?
Dak was a first round talent who got a DUI like 10 minutes before the draft.
Right, but he was so fourth.
Dak was a top 10. Yeah, but he was a top 10 pick before he got a DUI. So.
Man, how did that not work? It didn't work for him, but it worked for Laramie Tunsil, where it just was like, "That's fine, we're still going to take him." Like, how did that happen?
they didn't have time to marinate on Tunsil's video.
That's probably true.
All right, so we got to talk
about
the Bears. We're talking about the Bears for kind of a while here because
can we talk about that skinny dude who wants to talk about his mom all the time?
George McCaskey.
Yeah, George. Yeah.
So first of all, if anybody listening hasn't seen the George McCaskey press conference, you got to go watch it right now. It is incredible theater. It's
performance art.
It's performance art.
Hang on, I gotta do a warning. If you could not stomach the dinner party episode of The Office, do not watch this press conference.
It's the most cringe thing you'll see. So, it's incredible.
And we should mention this just to provide some context, because I'm not sure. I've lived in Chicago for quite a while off and on, and not everybody knows the Bears inside and out, maybe enough to get what's going on here. But the Bears are kind of rare in that they're not like part of a bigger business. They're just owned by the Halas family still to this day. And they're owned by the McCaskeys, who Virginia McCaskey is George Halas's, is it daughter or granddaughter? Whatever. She's like a daughter. Billion years old.
I thought it was granddaughter.
She's so old that it's hard to remember. I should Google it. Here's the thing. She runs the team. An old lady. This is like a mystery movie setup. Like an old lady runs the Bears. That is how they work. and her fail son is in charge of the Bears. George McCaskey is Virginia. And so, like, this is not like a normal mature...
She is, by the way.
Okay. JR, read the
facts. She is George Halas's daughter.
Okay, daughter.
Yeah, daughter. Sorry.
She's 99
The Bears are owned by George freaking Halas's daughter. Like, that's... think about how weird that is in modern day football. So, you know, there's not like an oil company giving.
It's like how
money.
John Tyler still has grandkids out there somewhere.
Yes,
right. Like this is like they are one generation removed from the Civil War.
It's not that bad.
Yeah,
incredible.
Correct. And so like this isn't normal. This isn't a normal thing where you have like some billionaire with a real estate business able to kick in capital whenever. It's not some, you know, smart Ivy League guy, hedge fund guy who's going to, you know, remake how things are done. It's an old lady who's been in football forever, whose dad was George Halas, whose kid runs the team and is not talented or good in front of the camera or understands football very well. And George McCaskey's entire press conference was basically referencing his mommy. I'm not like not kidding about this. Like, what did Virginia think of the team? Is like, well, she said she was disappointed. Like, don't.
No, he said in the only way that a mother
can say. Yeah. And when asked about his role, said, well, the owner of the team still wants me in this role. Like, your mom still wants you in the role. It was completely laughable. The whole press conference was just a disaster in like 10 different ways. There's a good like 5-sentence summary if you go to Twitter and find Jason Goff, who used to be a producer on The Score in Chicago. He summed it up in 5 points pretty well, just how stupid it was. And that franchise is a disaster. You know, we've made fun of Nagy and Pace quite a bit, but the Bears' problem fundamentally is their ownership doesn't know how to run a football team anymore. They know how to run a football team in 1947. But they don't know how to run a football team anymore. So they're going to screw this up again.
What happens if they fall ass first into success? Like they have Justin Fields, who potentially could be good. What if they accidentally pick up a good coach, or at least a coach who would know how to use him? Like I'm not going to sit here and say that Jim Harbaugh is a good coach, but Jim Harbaugh would know how to get the most out of Justin Fields.
Maybe. But
maybe.
So, yeah, sometimes you luck into a unicorn when you're a dumb team, but usually bad processes end in bad results. And it would be one thing if they were looking for one new person, but they're not. They're looking for a GM and a coach, and they will have some oversight over both of those things. And I think the GM is probably the more important thing here, because football's changed in how it operates. Like, you need somebody who is an expert in the salary. I think the Bears, what they would like to do is have an old school military guy style guy walk in and yell at everybody and tell them to execute better and, you know, get everybody in line so that, but that's not how things work anymore. This is about math and managing your salary cap and understanding the new trends in football and where little marginal things can be, you know, scraped off. Like they run like Standard Oil, and you need to be running, you know, a tech company at this point. It's not going to work. They'll screw up one of the two.
They're going to go out and hire. I was going to say, do you think they're going to go out and hire Brian Kelly
or Ditka?
It's the kind of thing.
Bring back Ditka.
Brian Kelly's the kind of thing they would do. For a long time, the Bears overdrafted people from local areas. Like, they overdrafted Northern Illinois and Notre Dame players for a very long time because the McCaskey saw him play. That's a thing that happened until like 5 years ago. And Brian Kelly is certainly it is literally the kind of thing the Bears would do. I don't think they will do it because that ship has kind of already sailed. If he was more available, maybe they would, though.
Well, the only reason I bring it up is because of Brian Kelly's comments that went viral back in September, where he said, like I believe in execution and the whole team should be executed.
Yeah,
or something.
He stole that line from the first Buccaneers coach. So don't give him too much credit.
Oh, you know who they should hire? Speaking of Buccaneers, they should go get Greg Schiano.
Jeez, why?
because Greg Schiano knows how to run a team, because he only gets Schiano men.
So the most appalling part of the McCaskey press conference is when he invokes the name weirdly invokes Jeff Dickerson, who is an ESPN reporter who recently passed away from colon cancer. His there was a GoFundMe for his 11-year-old son. His mother, Jeff Dickerson's wife, also passed away previously from cancer. So it's been something a lot of people have talked about. There's obviously a lot of mourning in the media community, but in the Bears community in general. And McCaskey casually mentions it as a sort of lead-in to prove a point or make the point that Adam Nagy's kids were getting picked on in school because they're, you know, the dad wasn't a very popular coach. So it was almost like, think about children like Jeff Dickerson's child when you're thinking about Adam Nagy's children, which, I mean, obviously you don't want kids being picked on in school or whatever. Like, I'm sure that happens in every market and it sucks. I'm sure that sucks, but it was just a very, tone deaf is almost like too weak because it just like, it was so unnecessary, such a bizarre, like a reverse non sequitur thing.
It was
going
a Michael. It was a Michael Scott. It was a, our coach's kids are getting picked on, but think of, what about these dead kids, you know, in front of all the people who know Jeff Dickerson and worked with Jeff? Just super awkward.
Exactly.
Like just a room silencing kind of thing to say. super bad, super awkward, very cringe.
It definitely left me not worried about the Bears.
Yeah, same.
In the near future.
They're screwed. They're so screwed.
The guy that they have helping with their GM search is the dude who said that Lamar should be a wide receiver, the Bills guy.
Bill Polian. Yeah,
Bill Polian.
So this is why they're going to screw this up. Like Bill Polian was once a good and respected front office person. He has a book that he wrote about building a front office that he likes to sell copies of, and he consults on these things somewhat regularly. But you don't need Bill Polian consulting on your searches for anything anymore. The game has definitely passed him by. it was a joke amongst people who know, and it was not a joke among Hub Arkish, who is, oh man, Hub needs to stop talking on Twitter. rough couple weeks for Hub, who immediately defended Bill Polian. But yeah, it's fine. Bill Polian, again, 30 years ago, a fine person to have on your search committee or hire. Now, not so much. Yeah. Rough.
Well, do you remember one of the things that Hub said was like a defensible position about Bill Polian? So that he's a six-time NFL Executive of the Year.
Yes.
And I'm over here like, Ryan Pace won Executive of the Year 2018. They should hire that guy.
They should. He's out there.
Matt Nagy, 2018 Coach of the Year.
Yep. It does not matter at all. Yeah.
It's tough. Yeah.
Hub published an article about how good Bill Polian is, and the picture they use of Bill Polian, he looks like a wax doll that was left out in the sun.
Great.
They're a bad franchise.
If Jordan Love is
suck. So yes, that we should trade.
Jordan Love is the quarterback of the Packers next year. Will they still win the NFC North?
Yes.
Yeah, I think they will. And I am very out on Jordan Love, but they're going to be well run and more talented than any other team in the division. Even without the quarterback, it'll be a bad division, but they'll win it. Yeah.
Well, I think it depends on when we find out or when the team finds out that Jordan Love is the go-to. Like if Aaron Rodgers does the will he won't he thing, then they're probably going to prepare for Rodgers. And then if they suddenly get Jordan Love, it's going to be awful. But I think a full offseason with preparing for his skill set.
A
full offseason of preparing for Jordan Love's skill set is probably good enough to win the North.
I guess
I wonder if any potential Aaron Rodgers trade involves still a quarterback coming back the other way to bridge one more year's worth of gap.
Possibly so. I also just wonder, let's say that the cap gets them, they lose Aaron and Devontae, and you know, they're going to lose some depth even without those guys. But who else would win it? Like, I guess the cousin Vikings maybe are okay. They might not screw up their search. Like, they're not completely incompetent as a franchise. So they're probably the only one to fear, but it's not going to be the Lions, and it's certainly not going to be the Bears. So, that's the only one to keep an eye on is the Vikings in their probably final Kirk year. But that's it. If they have Kellen Mond, then they suck just as bad as everybody else.
The Lions have so many holes just everywhere, like even outside of quarterback, that I honestly think that they should trade down for a king's ransom and attempt to rebuild their entire ass roster.
I like their tryhardness, but yeah, they're just a disaster.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Find a team like the Bears willing to trade up for number two, looking for that Mitchell Trubisky magic. Oh, man. That would be a good deal.
Yes, indeed.
So before we get to questions, we got to talk about this last game of the season, the Sunday night game, because people who listen to this know we love More Points 99, and this was 100% the same vibe even though it was only one game.
No Points 22.
It was good. It should honestly probably go down as one of the best games of all time. It was phenomenal as a finishing game. Setting the table just of the tie thing, having the tie thing come up in the first place, well, if they tie, then they both go to the playoffs, and people saying, well, they should do it. And I mean, everybody, I think, understanding they can't actually tie on purpose because the league would just crush them if they did that. That would be colluding. But having it out there like all day, like, oh, they should tie, they should tie, they should tie. And then having it actually get so close, because ties never happen. There was one tie this year, right? Pittsburgh and Detroit. That's it. There's like half a tie a year. It's something you mention as a footnote in your tiebreaker column. Like, oh, and if there's a tie, this happens. And then to get down to the last 2 seconds with it tied and everything that went into it, like the Chargers rally should never have happened. It was so bizarre. All those fourth downs. I meant to look this up. I did not get to, but I don't think there's ever been another 19 play drive to take 2 minutes or less. I don't think it's ever happened before. But the Chargers had a 19 play 2 minute drive, which is
insane. Be the most efficient drive of all time.
Just crazy.
So, just in case people are listening, to this after the world has ended and they don't have any of the reference points, this is a game against between the Chargers and the Raiders. We know because of previous outcomes during the day that if the Steelers win, the Steelers are in the playoffs as long as one of these teams lose. Because the winner is in. Raiders, Chargers, the winner goes to the playoffs. The loser is out, and the Steelers take that last spot. But if they tie, they're both in, and the Steelers are out. So, of course, like you were referring to, everybody on Twitter, myself included, absolutely rooting for a scenario where the two teams look at each other and say, let's just take some knees. We're both in. Let's tie. And then on top of it, you get a ridiculous fourth quarter comeback by the Chargers that forces overtime. They both kick a field goal on their first series. And then the Raiders end up with the ball last, and Daniel Carlson does, in fact, win it as time expires in overtime. There have been 14 ties in the last 30 years of the NFL. Like you said, half a tie a year. It's fair to note that since 2017, when the overtime rules went down to 10 minutes, you see somewhat more frequently. There's been one a year since then, twice in 2018. But there had already been one in 2020 and the idea or 2021 and the idea that you need one for to create this ridiculous scenario with like dudes in the stands wearing Pittsburgh jerseys, just living and dying, just praying for resolution. Amazing. Amazing. That
also,
there were people
also
in Los
fantastic.
Angeles cheering for that.
Just love that.
So
it was wild. Or Las Vegas.
How did the Raiders end up with the ball at the very end? You remember?
Well, the two teams kicked field goals and then they had the ball. After that,
or what about Casey Hayward? Didn't Casey Hayward get an interception in overtime, or am I misremembering?
I don't think that was in overtime. No, I'm misremembering, but yes, he got an interception, but I'm pretty sure that was in regulation.
So, okay, so Casey Hayward is salty, like real salty. He posted a video of his interception and said, "Feels good to seal the game with an interception and knock out an old team or like knock out my old team, keep them out of the playoffs or something like that. It's like, wow, like I did not know that he was scorned by the Chargers so badly. I wonder how he feels about Green Bay.
Yeah, I bet they're on the list.
Ah, fantastic.
And then, I don't remember the Chargers being mean to him at all. Just like they just didn't offer as much as the Raiders.
And then we also had
everybody makes lists.
Yeah, we also had this controversy, kind of non-controversy at the end, where the Chargers took a timeout right before the Raiders ran their second last play of overtime, and the controversy was weird because I think the thought process going was that everybody was assuming that at this point the Raiders decided they would just run until the clock ran out. And then the Chargers took a timeout because their defense was not aligned properly. It was not set up to stop the run. And that the Raiders then changed their mind to try and pick up a first down and kick a field goal. I don't think that's true. I think the cooler heads of the next day have basically made that narrative kind of go away, that the Raiders were not taking knees. They were still trying to move forward. And they were close to field goal range. And it's really the Chargers' fault for not stopping a 10-yard run from happening when they knew a run was very likely. But wanted to mention it, and also did want to mention David Carr made it worse after the game, because when asked if the Chargers timeout changed their strategy, he quickly answered, "Oh yes, absolutely." He followed it up with, "We were always trying to win the game," but it was a weird answer to that question. So I don't think it mattered, but it was interesting, and it made things much more dramatic.
Yeah, I thought it did. I think it did matter. I do think they changed their strategy, but I also think it was defensible to call that timeout. Yep. because you have to assume the Raiders aren't going to run out the clock. I mean, the Chargers, show some pride on your run defense. My God,
right, totally.
10 yards on a. I mean, that, all they got to do is show up for a couple plays there. The Raiders were able to really move the clock for as incredible as the Chargers offense was, and like for figuring out a ways to, you know, break the Raiders on fourth down over and over and over again in regulation. Chargers defense really let them down. They kind of have no one to blame but themselves, because that game easily could have been a tie. Easily. So Steelers fans very happy. Daniel Carlson, in my mind, famous for missing a field goal that allowed the Packers to tie the Vikings a few years back. He has had a very nice second leg of his career after he got out of the NFC North. It's gone very well for him.
Very nice.
Well done. He's had a nice second leg.
Yeah.
As all kickers should be referred to.
It's true. But yeah, good stuff. So real quickly, yeah. Potential playoff opponents. Who do we want? Who do you want? The 49ers are scary. Rodgers 0-3 in the playoffs against them. Well, yeah, of course you want Philly, the seventh seed. Who doesn't want Philly? Especially because it means Tom Brady's yes. Going home.
Yeah,
the exclusive reason I want Philly is because it eliminates Tom Brady.
Yeah, the most hardcore team to root for is definitely Philly. Philly, yes. The most realistic one to root for is Arizona. They have to travel the wrong way time zone-wise. They have to travel the wrong weather weather-wise. And they have been crashing and burning the second half of the season. They were one of the best.
And also... Short
Monday
week.
Night. Yeah, Monday night.
And short week too. Good point. They're the Monday night game against the Rams, and so they will be on a short week no matter what. They were at one point number one in DVOA for this season after a fairly good sample size, and they have just been on a consistent downward trend since then, especially on offense, where they're 15th. They were 16th in weighted DVOA. Like the Packers soared in weighted DVOA. They ended up ninth on the season, but outsiders very helpfully put out an adjustment for backup quarterbacks and other important backups, and that has the Packers at third, just behind the Cowboys and Patriots. So Arizona is one of those teams that's gone the other way completely, and very discombobulated. Still a good defensive team, but just a terrible matchup for them to come to Lambeau and struggling all the way. But I don't think they'll get past the Rams. But I'm rooting for Arizona in that game. That's the other team that I want for sure.
Do you think the 49ers can beat Dallas? Because I they're scary, but Dallas might be the best team in the NFC field. It's really, I don't know.
Dallas is the best by basically every efficiency metric, and so beating them is hard. But I actually think I'm going to take San Francisco when we do picks in this game. I'm torn on it because I do like Kyle Shanahan as an offensive play caller. He does shoot himself in the foot fairly frequently, unfortunately, as Mike does once in a while. But they've been playing really well lately. I think that they kind of had a realization on how to use Ayuk properly, and their defense has really come on lately. I think over the second half of the season, they're more or less Dallas is equal, and I just like the matchup there with San Francisco going heavy against the Dallas defense, which is very good, but definitely is better against 11 personnel than what San Francisco does. So Dallas is good, but a little bit of a tough matchup for them, I think. So I think San Francisco can win that game, and I'm going to pick them to win that game. I don't really.
I'm pretty comfortable with any.
Yeah, I don't want the 49ers.
San Francisco's scary.
Yeah, I don't want them. We're good against them, but I still don't want them.
Yeah, yeah, that's the only one that scares me, truthfully. San Francisco, and there are times where it's like, why would anybody be afraid of a Jimmy Garoppolo led team?
Yeah, yeah.
The defense isn't like all world necessarily, but
the quarterback is garbage. That is true. But I'm still a little scared of them. The Rams don't do anything for me, even though they're objectively a good team too. But I'm not scared of them either. They're fine. Matt Stafford's bad.
I think Matt Stafford is doing his end of season trail off as he usually does. Matt Stafford's EPA EPA per dropback tends to be asymptotic throughout the year.
Good word.
Incredible.
Thank you. I'm using my Six Sigma greenbelt here.
Jeez.
And for those who don't understand, it's a curve that goes down towards a number but never quite reaches it. So his EPA always starts really high and then it dips off and then kind of levels off poorly near the end. That's just your standard Matt Stafford. It's how he was with the Lions, and apparently it's how he is with the Rams.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Shall we get to the questions?
Let's do them. Let's knock them out.
All right. So we'll start with Patreon questions. Obviously, patrons have question priority. We'll start with Mark Podskarby. We discussed war on the mini pod, going off on that. If Rodgers had chosen to retire in the offseason, what do you think the Packers would have been this year with Love?
Kind of bad. I'm more down on Love than probably most people are. But
I don't know, man. Did you see Packers Twitter today?
Yeah, they were tearing him up pretty good. That's true. I think there's a huge difference if they go into the season with Love versus Rodgers. They were good in close games. I think they lose essentially all of those close games instead of winning most of them. I think that they're not in a few other games that Aaron played well in. I think it's like a 7 or 8 win difference with Love. I think they're well out of the playoffs and like a 5 or a 6 win team if they go into the season with Love.
It's a condemnation.
Yeah, part of that is future casting a little bit. Like if they don't have Rodgers and they're with their backup quarterback, I'm not sure they're as aggressive at midseason acquisitions as they otherwise would be. I don't know if they go get Rasul Douglas, but their offensive line beaten up, I think, just murders Jordan Love back there too. I think he has almost no chance behind Rodgers. Makes that line a lot better. Like, they played well, but he moves very well in the pocket. He really helps them out. Love has very poor pocket presence, and the clock is not good. I think they get destroyed with him.
And I think you couple that with Love not being fully trusting of his ability to escape the pressure and run upfield. Like, it doesn't, I mean, obviously you saw the 2-point conversion where it was designed for him, but it doesn't feel like Jordan Love is prepared to do that. I imagine that will come as he gets more experience, but he would not be very good at that this year either.
Nope, don't think
so. God, Aaron Rodgers' pocket presence is just insane. It's so good.
Also, before we move off of war, PFF was brought up amongst Packers Twitter today. Creed Humphrey is their highest graded rookie.
Yep, he is.
Okay.
And Creed Humphrey went one play after Myers, and they play the same position.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so people were like, was this the wrong choice? And it's like, you're using a PFF grade on a rookie and a guy who's only played half the season.
Yeah, Josh Myers got hurt. So.
And who was also really good while he was playing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. PFF grades are garbage. PFF Mike is also garbage.
Oh, harsh.
Okay. PFF is not the only place to recognize that Creed Humphrey has been very, very good. And the Packers were thought to be connected to him because they needed that position. And it seemed like he would be an obvious fit for them. So I can see why there's...
They took a road grading mauler from Ohio State and they replaced him with a road grading mauler from Ohio State.
Yeah, it works.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not saying... I'm just saying, like, at the time... people thought, why, if you were going to draft Josh Myers, did you just not take Creed Humphrey?
Yeah. To tie it back to the mini pod, by the way, if you want a more nuanced take on PFF's war calculation and all the problems I have with it, just to tie it back to that, they had Tom Brady as a 4-war player this year and Aaron Rodgers as a 3-war player. I think that drastically underrates quarterbacks. I think replacement level quarterbacks are just trash. I mean, a replacement level quarterback is going to be the quarterback of a 4-win team. And I think Rodgers and Brady both are probably something more like 7 or 8-win players. That's what you get with the best quarterbacks in the game. That's what pushes teams with good quarterbacks to be 12-win teams fairly frequently. That's why that happens. So I think that the difference between Rodgers and Love is massive.
If you were to select like one quarterback currently in the NFL to be a quote unquote replacement quarterback, who do you think fits that bill?
I think it's Tim Boyle. I think he is the basically the replacement level quarterback is the quarterback you can, if you want to call it backup, fine, but I don't think that's correct. Backup quarterbacks I think are better than replacement level quarterbacks a lot of the time. You can't just, here's why. If your starter dies, you have a backup. But you can't just go to the street and get a backup-level quarterback right away. So I think Boyle's about right. And it doesn't really matter from the Packers' perspective because I think Jordan Love's not very good. You know, maybe if we were doing an honest calculation and that we had like a decent backup quarterback behind him. I'm searching for a decent backup in my head right now and having trouble pulling one out. Nope. All bad. They all suck. It's just really large.
I was gonna say Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah. Okay. That's probably good for like replacement level starter. Like he's the bridge between starter and backup.
I think that's fair.
That's a fair point. I get that.
Look at me defending PFF. I feel awful.
But most people don't have the problem with that is most people don't have Ryan Fitzpatrick. Most people have
right, because he's
worse.
Hurt.
Most people's backups are terrible.
So. All right, Mark Putzgarby has another question here. The Saints went for it year after year with an aging quarterback while continuously pushing cap space down the road, and now appear to have a long rebuild to get back to being a possible title contender. Are we heading down the same path as them? I would say that if the Saints, if the Packers didn't have Love, didn't have Rodgers this year, you could do way worse than being the Saints. The Saints were in the playoff chase until the very last week of the season.
Yeah.
But see, to me, the thing that sticks out is the cap hell.
Yeah.
And as long as there is breath in Russ Ball's body, the Packers will not be in cap hell.
They're kind of in cap hell. I disagree with Matt.
They might. The problem is right now they have too many good players. I don't think that they will do the whole, like, I'm going to shoot myself in the foot 3 years from now thing that the Saints have been doing.
I think they might. I think if they have another year of Rodgers window, I don't think they will. But if they do, I think they'll take on more salary to keep everybody around and push a whole bunch of void years into the future and go the Saints route. And I also think that's the correct thing to do. Not just because the Saints were pretty good this year, but because get the most out of this because you, despite having Favre and Rodgers back-to-back, you usually don't have great quarterbacks on your team. And so make the most of it while you do.
JR with JR's the world's bored. Most audible yawn.
Sorry. My eyes started glazing over. I looked up what the name was of the Greek character who takes the long, hard road out of hell. It's Orpheus.
It's Orpheus, yeah.
So
yeah.
Russ Ball is Orpheus.
Orpheus,
you don't
Eurydice.
Know the story of Orpheus?
No, I do. I just wanted to make sure I had the right name because I wasn't sure if I had the right character.
Are you saying that recording this podcast is Sisyphusian?
No, that's a different story. That's
totally different story.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just trying to. That's the other Greek myth I know.
Yeah. there's a lot of good ones. All right. Tim Braun asks, if Myers and Bakhtiari are healthy enough to play in the first playoff game, what is your starting five for offensive line?
I think Billy Turner is probably the bigger question at this point, but it's.
Who is not listed as IR and
he's
just
not.
Came off COVID today?
He did, so I think he'll play. I think Bakhtiari, Myers, I do have Turner out there. I am blanking on my offensive linemen who have played lately because they're.
I think you've for me it's
still be
right in order. Bakhtiari, Runyon Myers,
yeah.
Lucas
Patrick, yeah,
and then Turner.
Yep. Oh, you think Patrick over Royce Newman?
Yes, I take Patrick.
Yes, definitely.
So Lucas Patrick at right guard, is way better than Lucas Patrick at center.
Yeah, he is.
And also way better than Royce Newman. Lucas Patrick can at least stop a stunt.
Yeah, Royce Newman had a few good games. Let's give him a little bit of credit, but he still has a bunch of holes in his game,
and
too.
And then the Lions watched 5 minutes of film, knew that he couldn't stop a stunt, and
brought it down
to end the game.
Yep.
So in your mind, that might be the bigger issue with whether or not you start Myers, because it will give you an opportunity to strengthen your guard positions.
Yes. I think Myers is the cascading waterfall of good.
Tim Braun also asks, who is the most valuable to the team if Bakhtiari, Alexander, and Za'Darius Smith are all available to play in that first playoff game?
I think it's Alexander, you can make a case for some others, but they've been good without Za'Darius all year. Za'Darius is good as insurance. If something would happen to Gary or Preston, or just to give them some flexibility on passing downs, it's good to have him back. But he's definitely the least important here. They've been fine in that aspect all year. And Bakhtiari's important, for sure, but you know they've managed to weather this long. They clearly have some good chemistry, some good backups. They can be fine. Pass defense is an area where they can be exploited sometimes. And Jair coming back is huge to make that what was a hole, a Chandon-sized hole in their defense, suddenly disappear. So definitely Jair.
A Chandon-sized hole.
I
also agree. I think Alexander's the best option.
100%, because the difference between them in the Super Bowl last year is the Scotty Miller play, and Kevin King is still there. So it would be nice to have the guy who can break that up. So you alluded to Za'Darius Smith's plight on the podcast when I wasn't around. I haven't been wise to the theory that he just is unhappy with the situation and was possibly slow playing his return himself, and now might be available for the playoffs. Is it in your mind, like, is it possible he just, I mean, I know he is hurt, but like he's cool with just like missing the regular season and just showing up for the good stuff? Is that, you think, what's going on here?
The controversy is actually around him coming into the season, telling everyone that he's fine when he was super not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he goes and stinks it up in week one. I think when you compound that with like, I'm playing hurt and I'm Mr. Tough Guy and I'm doing it for the team, with getting absolutely lambasted by his coach in the post game, as well as his team not voting him captain, I think that he had an 8-week back injury and an 8-week salt injury.
I think that's possible.
And last year, every time he got hurt, he was down so many times, and then he came back in the game.
He was faking every single one
of them. Well, right. Like, I mean, at some point, it's like, well, he's just really tough. And then after like the seventh or eighth time, you're like, no. Is he even hurt?
This
What's
is just
going
what
on?
Za'Darius does. Za'Darius just stays down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. He's an interesting character. He's obviously still very beloved, which I think is kind of the interesting part of this. Like, if this is true, and I am not, I have no idea. But if there's even a shred of truth to it, it's amazing to me how he's still like this fun-loving guy that everybody loves, because you could see people turning on him awfully quick. I think it probably helps here that the pass rush has not suffered necessarily without him. But it's a super interesting situation there. And it's like Ryan Braun skipping spring training and then just showing up for the regular season. Like, yeah, there's maybe some wisdom. Like, you don't need to play the regular season. Let's just come around for the games that matter. Let's go.
Yep.
It's like that that one Ravens fan with the ultra white teeth who live streams after every game.
I have no idea.
You guys need to go find this. There's this Raven fan who live streams after every game, and every time they lose, he's like, bro, you're trying in the regular season. We're saving our best for the playoffs.
R.I.P. to the Ravens. Their season is over. By the way, the AFC is a whole jumbled mess. Like, I am not convinced any team is actually good in the AFC, except probably the Patriots, who are what, the sixth seed?
Yeah, they're good, but their offense is only bleh. Their defense is great, but they have as many holes as any other team, and if they run into the wrong matchup, they'll be done in a second too. So with you on that.
Yeah, the Colts lost to the Jaguars. The Colts lost to the Jaguars just shook me. I'm not even over it now. I can't even believe it. Alex Lamers asks. Oh, go ahead.
Just. With everything on the line against the worst team in football, how do you lose that? How do you not get out of bed and win that game? Incredible loss. Carson Wentz this is why you don't pick up Carson Wentz. It's why you don't trade for quarterbacks of his caliber, because this can happen to you, and it did. Just awful.
Yeah, that's wild. He's an alternate for the Pro Bowl, by the way, Carson Wentz. So, or what did he, or was it even, he might have even made the Pro Bowl. I think he's an alternate, but like, people thought he did a good job.
People are wrong.
Alex Lamers asks, I'm getting some whiplash with the defense. We've gone from Joe Barry's bad takes before the season to maybe he's actually good to early to mid-November to some pretty bad performances lately. What should we expect from this group in the playoffs?
I think that they are better this year than they have been lately. So real quick, they actually had a better defensive DVOA last year than they do this year when the season's all said and done. But I think the season kind of went like this. Barry's scheme is good. It works pretty well. They played it competently. It got better when they got Douglas. It started to get figured out a little bit as the season wore on. Teams started to lean on the run a little bit more, which they're not interested in stopping nor good at stopping most of the time. Started picking on slot a little bit more when Shannon was in there, identifying Savage as a weak link a little bit as well, and pushing to down roster receivers. And the Packers just not having the horses to change back to catch it. But the Packers were usually pretty competent. They didn't do anything really stupid on defense. They tackled well when Devondre Campbell was in there. The middle of the defense was very solid when Kenny was in there. The middle of the defense was very solid. I think they just really started to run out of talent and scheme. And with Alexander back, if Clark is there and Campbell is healthy, I think they'll look more like they did early in the season, fully loaded, and they'll be fine. So I think Barry has done a good job, even if some of the numbers don't say so. And I do think just everybody looks like they're where they're supposed to be most of the time when the other team's not running double reverse wide receiver passes.
All right. Brett Smith asks, I know the Lions emptied the playbook on Sunday, but does the defensive performance concern you at all? It seemed like there were a few plays the Lions were wide open, not just on trick plays. So does it matter that there was nothing to play for, pretty much?
Packers rolled out there and gave not one damn shit nor hell.
Yeah. Matt's right. This is just human nature. There's nothing to play for in this game. People were making business decisions all over the place. If you don't have the motivation or the incentives to do your normal work during the week, to pay attention to all the details, to actually put your body through what you need to put it through, you're just not going to be as good when you show up to the game. And that's what happened to the Packers this week. Throw this game in the trash. It doesn't matter. You can be more concerned about, you know, a few games leading up to it where there are a few holes that were exploited, but they're minor. And generally, I think they'll be fine. The Lions game doesn't matter. Not a lick, not a bit.
The phrase, sorry, it's human nature, has been ruined for me because immediately in the back of my head, the song Schadenfreude from Avenue Q starts playing.
I've seen Avenue Q a couple times. That one doesn't stick in my head for me, though. So.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so, you know, sorry, Nikki, human nature, nothing I can do. it sticks in the back of my head like it's earworm. There's your podcast homework. Go listen to Schadenfreude from the Avenue Q soundtrack.
Matub with the deep voice should sing more often is my take on that.
Oh, hang on. If my deep voice is still here, check this out.
It's very here. Yes.
Live in my house, I'll be your shelter.
Nope.
I have no idea what the fuck that is. Assilatam.
I will cover you. Reprise from Rent.
Okay.
Asilatam says Bears and Vikings are getting a facelift. Packers step back with salary cap issues. We sort of addressed this already, but yeah. Will the NFC North be the new NFC East next year? So-so records playoff team with a non-winning record. I say yes.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
No losing records in the playoffs this year. Very sad.
And surprising.
Yeah.
Genuinely surprising.
And the next team up in both cases, the Colts and the Saints, also were winning records. Yep. So. Unusual. Jesse Gennigan says, what coaching hire for the Vikings or Bears would scare you? And the more likely scenario, which ones would make you laugh at them? I mean, we talked about Brian Kelly. Obviously, that's not happening, but that would be incredible.
Yeah. I'm going to have to see who they actually...
What do you think of Brian Flores?
Brian Flores is a pretty good coach, I think. I think he's getting a little bit more accolades than he deserves, partially because he clearly wasn't the problem in Miami. I watched more Dolphins than I should, and they're they're not always analytics darlings in terms of what they do, but they're clearly like good executors in terms of what you know, how their players play, and their quarterback's bad. Like Tua's bad. He's just not going to be the guy. And you know, to get a winning record out of a really, really questionable quarterback situation for 3 years is impressive. So I think he's a good coach. I think he's certainly the best available coach, and it would scare me a little bit because there hasn't been a lot of competence in the division. So he's the best one out there right now. I suspect they will do worse.
The rumors out of Miami are that Flores was like, guys, Tua, just the mayor of Ain't Itsville.
Yeah.
Get him the hell out of here.
This is the rumor.
And they were like, no, you're gone.
Yeah. Tua is the owner's pick, and that is how they're rolling. So that's what happened. I think he's pretty good, though. I think the most hilarious thing that could possibly happen is the Bears hire Vic Fangio. Now, I don't think anybody's interested in that, but it'd be hilarious. And I don't.
Oh, what if the Bears hired someone off of TV?
Well, that would be hilarious too. Like, but
like Tony Romo? Who are we talking about?
No. I'm talking like
that'd
like,
be a good hire. Like I'd hire Mel Tony Kiper. Romo. Mel Kiper.
What if they hired
Mel Kiper?
I don't think Mel's interested in the job. I don't.
That would be so funny.
Who in the hell's Mel Kiper anyway?
I'm waiting for the Bears to hire a bad, a medium college coach. I feel like that's what's destined here.
Sure.
And by the way, Jim Harbaugh has been in the league before, obviously, and been fairly successful. I don't think he's actually a very good coach. I'll just go out there right now. I think you've seen it at Michigan that he can recruit, but especially his offense is very backward. His defenses are okay. And those 49er teams, I think, were a result of their coordinators more than anything else. His offensive coordinator was Greg Roman. Greg Roman has gone on to coordinate many a good offense. I don't think that Harbaugh is very good unless he has good assistants, and so that's really all it comes down to with him.
Well, let's hope the Bears and Vikings don't hire Greg Roman.
That would be a good hire. That would be really smart. Somebody should do that.
I think I saw Leslie Frazier involved in the Bears. Ghosts of NFC North past.
Yes, not to rip Leslie Frazier too much, but I'm in favor of that hiring. That would be excellent.
not to badmouth you, but I like it. that's a funny way to put it.
Look,
but yes.
Man, I'm not going to say that you're terrible, but
he's not terrible. He's just like very mediocre. They wouldn't do anything with Leslie Frazier.
Well, I also. Heads up, there's a lot of Bills sites covering Leslie Frazier to the Bears.
All right.
They're terrified of losing him.
That totally makes sense. I just don't think he's a good maybe he would be a good head guy in another run. I just don't think he was very good last time.
I didn't realize he's also the assistant head coach in Buffalo.
Well, okay.
I don't know what that means. I'm pretty sure that's just a title.
In his case, it's an emeritus title. He is, well respected and a little bit older. So, yeah.
So I was always under the impression that assistant head coach is just something that you give to a coordinator who you don't want to leave.
It often is that too, because you can't promote it other than head coach.
All right, Patrick Detmer asks, do you think there's a possibility that the offense will have some addition by subtraction with MVS out of the lineup and Cobb coming back? Rodgers has struggled with his deep shots to MVS all year. Is his absence more likely to help 12 look for more high percentage throws underneath or cause the offense to struggle without his ability to take top off the defense come playoff time?
Listen.
I feel like this question is to me, but you go first.
this question is worth asking 8 weeks ago. But Rodgers' deep ball is back. Rodgers is top five in deep ball completion percentage.
Okay. That's true.
What? I'm saying with MVS back and Devontae getting all of the attention, I do think that the shot plays would be there. And Rodgers is throwing beyond 20 yards now.
So,
and especially to the outside hash on the left, throwing very well.
Yeah. Okay. But a lot of those have not been to MVS. And...
Right. But what I'm saying is I think having your 4-3 guy back is never a bad thing.
Okay, that's fair. That makes sense.
I wonder what correlation, if any, to the line play. Rodgers increased sort of confidence in the line as the season has gone on. Maybe that made things a little easier for him to take shots downfield. Certainly if Bakhtiari is there, he's going to be at his utmost confidence. So that could, you know, that leads to more shots.
That first series against the Lions, Rodgers is sitting in the pocket, just like making a sandwich.
He was very happy in that game. That was a very good moment for him.
It did make me nervous of bad habits, though. I hate to see him have too much time. I don't like it. And the one thing that Matt's right about is he hasn't been tempted by MVS lately. Like, MVS has not been drawing those throws, and Aaron has been hitting them to other people. So you're right. It's 8 weeks ago, yes, it probably does make a difference. But they're focusing on different throws to different receivers now. Lazard has been doing a lot more work deep, and that will probably continue. So, and also keep in mind, as bad as MVS has been, the fewer people you have, the closer Amari Rodgers is to playing in a game. And that's much worse. So,
but Scarby has another question, which is a lot, but I think it's a good one. And the NBA coaches are often labeled as good regular season coaches, but not a good playoff coach. Is there something similar in the NFL, and what makes a coach in the NFL a good playoff coach? My instinct here is that you can't really compare the two, because the NBA coaches develop that reputation because of their ability to adjust over the course of a 7-game series against the same opponent. Yeah. Football's playoffs are the same format as a regular season. I would think there's very little difference.
I think there used to be. I think there used to be, but aren't anymore. And I'll give you an example. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, it was much more common for teams to play old school football, run the ball twice, and then throw on third down and then punt. However, when teams got into the playoffs, some of the younger and smarter and better coaches, because of the desperation of the situation, would start playing a more correct brand of pass-happy football. That happened pretty often. The ones who didn't often lost when they shouldn't have. The biggest example of that's Marty Schottenheimer, who would run the ball to a fault forever and ever and ever in postseason games, and run himself out of games a lot, even when the Chargers got behind, even when whoever he happened to be coaching got behind. So I think in the old days, there were a few coaches that would run themselves out of the playoffs, but I don't think that really exists anymore. Everybody just keeps up their normal strategy, and your normal strategy is the one that got you to the playoffs. So, yeah, sophistication has, I think, taken away a lot of the good playoff, bad playoff distinction.
All right, Flaley Joel Osmond asks, between the Smiths, who is the bigger mercenary? The one who only plays well for dollars per sack, or the one who only plays at all in the playoffs? I don't know. They both have mercenary instincts.
They do. They both do. I'm not sure.
I'm going with Nick Perry 2.0.
That would be Preston. Okay.
Yeah, you love that example.
I'll go with Preston.
I'm just telling you, like, Preston Smith is mirroring Nick Perry's career arc.
Sure.
Through his
also
to be fair, this is his third contract he's fighting for. Perry was going for a second.
Yeah. And if Za'Darius was hurt, then he was hurt. If he wasn't hurt, his motivation is different than chasing dollars. It is it's not that. So Preston's the merc here. He's the one he's the one showing up for big bucks.
Yeah, what a year. Also, second half to unrelated, would a Super Bowl win get Rodgers to consider a Brady-esque structure that grossly underpays him in order to keep the band together?
No way.
Absolutely not.
Hell no.
Yeah,
no chance.
So here's the only thing that gives me pause with this is that I've compared Rodgers a lot lately to Zach Greinke. As a guy, when he was with the Brewers, there was some thought that he would sign with the Brewers again, and then he ended up turning him down and ended up getting traded, signed a massive offseason. But a guy who just doesn't think like everybody else. You can't assume you know what's going on in the brain of Zach Greinke, just like you can't assume you know what's going on in the brain of Aaron Rodgers. He likes to, for better or worse, likes to think a lot about everything and think of it from a very unique point of view. And I don't know if we can actually forecast what's going on. Every instinct I have, and I'm sure you guys have, is that he is still leaving at the end of the season, or will, you know, put in place the situation where he'd have to leave, where the Packers would have to trade him. But he's not like other people. We don't really know what his motivations truly are still. So who freaking knows?
Look, if Aaron Rodgers in the rest of his career takes a Brady-esque sub-market value contract, I will run naked around my block.
I don't want that. No one wants that.
I'm not worried about that. That is how it's not going to happen.
Absolutely no one.
Yeah, Aaron's getting paid, and
Aaron Rodgers. Yeah,
yeah. He will live where his next team. He'll play where he wants, but he will get paid for it, big time. He's not taking
Aaron Rodgers. He loves stats and status.
Yep.
Like in the Lions game, he literally took a sack instead of throwing the ball away. He was out of the pocket and dove for the line of scrimmage instead of throwing the ball away. He wants to be the highest paid quarterback. He wants to have more MVPs than Brett Favre. He wants those things.
Yep.
And those things bring you supermax contracts.
Who is that man running outside? No thing. It's just the Packers thirst trap. Naked down the block. All right, Packers Twitter.
That was showing off my meat web.
That was weird. Yeah. I recommend everybody.
That was a great day, though. Like, the fact that Thirst Trap Thursday made it all the way to players is phenomenal.
PJ Vessels asks, last Patreon question here, which coaching vacancy are you taking and why?
Oh,
Denver.
No. Okay. Well, you make your own answer. I have a different answer. That's fine. Denver's good. You live there. You commute.
Yes, that's why. Okay. I would take Denver because I could commute.
And my answer is the same.
Also, Denver's going to get a new owner.
Yeah.
And they probably have the best roster outside of quarterback.
And they might have a quarterback.
Yeah. You know what? I changed my answer. If Aaron Rodgers goes to Denver, I want the hell out of there.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
So I'll take the Bears are, I think, objectively the worst job. I'm taking that. I get tons of leeway, and they run so stupidly that I can get out of bed and fall, hit the floor, and I'll just make them better without trying. Like, fixing the Bears is making them marginally better is so easy, and selling a tank because they need to rebuild the whole roster is so easy. You only have you don't have any draft picks because the last GM was so stupid. So you get two or three years of leeway just to do a little marginal stuff and lose without any pressure, and then you can build it back up. So it's a really good you can't fall off the floor kind of job, and I'm all about that. Plus, I can commute there too.
And you don't want to disappoint mother.
I'm also good at speaking truth to power, so that some, it might not Norman, last too long.
Some Norman Bates energy now going on there. Let's move to Twitter questions. Big Rig, what injury will the team use to keep Amari off the playoff roster?
Long COVID.
Oh, jeez.
Burst inner ear tube, something that throws off your balance, something to explain the whole thing. Burst eardrum.
He did. That was not his worst day, though, against the Lions. He has gotten incrementally better over the course of the year.
You ran right. Was pointed out a million times to us.
I know. We're those people now.
But that's the thing, is he started on the left sideline. You can't run left if there's no left to run.
You can't.
It's true.
Tactical error by the Lions.
Yeah, whatever injury, it's going to be on his right side. I'm pretty confident because he does. He'll favor left. Okay, so Matthew, NFL owner, says, how many listeners thought for way too long that JR was a sports reporter that was facetiously trending rather than a reporter covering trending sports? Or am I just a dumb idiot? Part two. I like part two, actually. How early is too early to draft the punter? I don't know whether to be quite insulted. I don't expect people to know what I write or anything, but I do say trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel at the front of every one of these guys.
Yeah,
so, I don't know.
I love how he's been listening for 2 years and thought you were so egotistical.
Just call myself trending. Yeah, I'm trending, guys. I'm trending sports reporter.
I'm crying. I think
crying with the voice modulator is also quite hilarious in and of itself. So
I just wonder what made him realize otherwise. Was it the rant? It had to be the rant about
talk about.
It had to be talk about.
Yeah, I don't know where to go with that or how to feel about that. I guess fine. It doesn't matter. But no, I definitely work for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And have for a few years, quite some time actually, if you count all of the community publications associated back to 2004, we have to go. So long tenured journalist. I kind of have grown to not like the term journalist because I feel like it's a little disrespectful when I'm referring to myself. Now, I mean, obviously I think I can classify myself as that, but like the things I do are like Twitter lists and historical lookbacks and all this kind of like fun stuff. And then I'm, you know, in the same building as people who are doing like, honest to God, amazing news cover, you know, news coverage of like protests and COVID and the government. I mean, those people are geniuses. And I'm like, hey, here's 10 funny things that were on Twitter last week, you know? So I always kind of balk at using journalists, but I am definitely a trending sports reporter. That is the sort of weird name that my title has. I
also never draft a punter.
If you never draft a punter.
So hold on a second. Hold on a second. Two things. First of all, it's always been weird that sports was for like 100 years exclusively covered as if it were just straight up news and not as entertainment. And so I think you actually cover it kind of the right way to a large extent because it's fundamentally entertainment. It's, you know, it doesn't really matter what
at worst it straddles that line. It's called the toy shop historically because you can kind of mess around. It is that like gap between news and feature or entertainment or whatever. So like, I think that's the idea of this position and other papers finding that position is like, you can have the serious columnist who like really opines about stuff, but this is also kind of a different spin on columnist where it's more like, let's just have some fun. Let's just like be in our fandom a little bit without being overtly fandom. But even that I think is a little bit of a gray area. So I think we've talked about that before.
Yes.
Anyway, keep going.
Second, I believe he's referring to a specific punter. He is referring to San Diego State's Matt Araiza, the greatest college punter of all time.
And the punter, capital T, capital P.
Isn't he just the guy who just kicks the hell out of it?
He kicks the hell out of it. He is also their field goal kicker. He is sort of the Shohei Ohtani of college football in that sense. And yes, he has the greatest gross punting of all time by a hefty margin, and also is very erudite in how he speaks about the philosophy of punting, and that he gains additional net yards by kicking the crap out of the ball, not just because he can kick it so far and people return it, also because it's very hard to field punts that are flying as far as he kicks them. He can kick them further away from the returner, over their heads to the sidelines, and because of that, ends up with a higher net, even though he's out kicking his coverage every time. So Matt Araiza is a fascinating guy. He is definitely the best college prospect at the position ever, without any question. And I actually would advocate that he is worth a draft pick. And I hate drafting punters, but I would go with like a fourth for him. And if somebody did a third, I wouldn't actually think too badly of them.
Wow.
Yeah. Go watch
the philosopher punter.
If people haven't, go read about Matt Araiza. Go watch him. Go watch highlights of his punts and the cameras losing his punts because they don't believe they're going to go that far. And returners just like giving up. It's really entertaining to watch his punts. They're great.
What's the, what was the baseball name you said?
Shohei Ohtani.
Okay. The only reason I know that name is because Secret Base, SB Nation's YouTube channel, made a, I think it was MLB The Show roster of like 11 of him, and they made the playoffs.
They would definitely make the playoffs. They would win the World Series without question. They would have the best hitter and the best pitcher on the team. That's fine.
Yeah. So
he can play every position competently.
They put him in every position and then also like made reliever versions of him. And
he's so good that I don't think that's even that interesting. It's obvious that they would be the best team in baseball. All right.
So from Joe Rob, friend of mine here, any chance Rodgers cleans up the look to mean business like he has for playoffs and regular season in the past, or would that destroy the 2021 Zen?
Well, he did shave.
He did.
But he's still got the hair.
Yeah, I think he looks the like Scott Bakula, necessary roughness.
Yeah, I think the thing I think a lot of times he has a look, but I actually think this is his look right now is just who he wants to be for the most part, and shaving is as clean as it's going to get. That's my read on the situation. If he shows up clean cut, I'll be pretty shocked. I think you're getting ratty-haired Aaron for the playoffs is what you're going to get.
I mean, the man bun and that hair is showing up in State Farm commercials now. So, like, this is who he wants to be.
Could he just wash his hair just once?
No.
Like, oh, my God.
It's so bad. It's bad. Joe Rob also says, can the only response to this be me singing Everything Zen? Which you know what? I'm not going to do it.
There's two answers.
But,
No. If you say that you're not going to do it, you have to say,
I'm not going to do it.
I don't think so.
Oh, how did I blow that? What I was going to say about Everything's Done is that I just learned what the words were to the chorus like 2 years ago.
It's, I don't believe in
ago,
Elvis. The I don't believe in
no,
Elvis.
No, 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 no,
that,
oh.
Oh,
no.
Oh,
not, not that part. Not,
I know what you mean.
Not no, no sex in your violence. I knew all that. Okay. It's no sex in your violence. It try to see it once my way.
Try
how the chorus begins.
Way,
yeah. Yeah, I had no idea what those words were. It was just try to see it once my way. Okay, so I've sung it. I had no idea what those words were until like 2-3 years ago. I've been singing that song since I was in high school. But for whatever reason, I just never bothered to like look up those words or care what they were. I just would like, you know, rat-a-tat-tat it and just learned it. But Bush songs make no sense. So like
yeah,
you don't
say,
really
as,
need the words.
As this podcast millennial, grunge is bad and Bush sucks.
Wow.
Well, those,
wow.
Okay. Bush, nobody's going to argue wow. with about Bush sucking, but grunge is good.
No, Bush is bad. Of course they are, but they're one of they're my people.
They were bad
they're
in the day.
People.
By the way,
they were bad.
Man, I grew up with boy bands. I'm not going to defend my childhood music.
Of interest to a few listeners to this podcast, it is the 30th anniversary of Live's Mental Jewelry, the album the album that has the second worst lyrics of all time. Second only to Live's Throwing Copper, which has the worst lyrics of all time. Wait, that's
there
not
are three people in the world.
Yeah, I forgot the other Live album is actually worse than both of them. I take that back. The black cover one, Secret right. Samadhi. Yeah, that's the worst one.
Secret Samadhi. Yep,
yeah.
With Freaks and Rattlesnake. Yeah.
That is
okay, so there
terrible.
Are three people in the world who care about that reference, but good stuff.
Yes.
All right, Ryan Ziegler. What matchup out of the NFC or AFC is going to be the most shocking upset for Week 1 of the playoffs?
When the Philly beats Tampa Bay.
I think the Steelers are going to win.
No.
No. That would be shocking.
Not because, not because I think they should or are better. They're not. But I feel it in my bones, man. You let one of those, like, blue bloods into the playoffs, they always make noise. It's so frustrating. Yeah. I mean, the Packers are one of them, but, like, still. Yep.
I think it'll be the 49ers. I think they're going to pull that upset, and that Garoppolo pulling an upset will shock people. So I'll go with that.
I just want the Steelers to meet the Raiders in the AFC Championship game where the Raiders are like, oh, it looks like we should have taken the tie because now the Steelers are going to eliminate us. The Steelers are not going to the AFC title game. Jonathan Deal asks, we know players who test positive for COVID don't have to test for 90 days. Who should we be paying attention to around divisional and championship weekend time?
Yeah, it was always Aaron.
It's Aaron.
When he tested positive, we knew that his window was going to run out like right before the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and fortunately, the CDC has reeled things back, so it's less of a concern than it used to be. But he's still going to have like 10 days before the Super Bowl where he is in that window.
Yep, he is. Aaron will become eligible again for COVID stuff on February 1st, and so he's the one to pay attention to if they make it that far, because that could be a big, huge, hairy deal.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting what the NFL does. Are players going to – I mean, the NFL stands to lose a lot. If Aaron Rodgers is going to play in a Super Bowl and suddenly can't because of COVID, you know, there were always whispers around the NBA finals if, like, things were fudged a little bit, you know.
If Aaron Rodgers tests – like, if the Packers are going to the Super Bowl and Aaron Rodgers tests positive for COVID on February 12th, that test gets lost until February 14th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, simple ass.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly an interesting scenario. I think Alan Lazard is in a similar boat because he was positive. No, was he a close contact? I don't even know if
he
tested positive.
I think he was a close contact. I'm not sure. I think
he was too.
I think almost everybody else on the team is good to go. There weren't too many before Aaron.
Devontae was before.
Was Devontae before?
Was he not? That was the Arizona game. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was. You're right. Then he was. Okay. So that's also important. Woo. Okay. Some could get dicey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, man. It'll be interesting if, like, so also the Omicron variant by early February, there are optimistic scenarios where the numbers have plummeted in the United States by then. So I wouldn't hold my breath, but, like, it's at least plausible that it's less of a risk to the greater community at that point, let alone to the NFL. So we'll see. We'll see. Let's see who is next on my list. Alan Hable. In light of Bakhtiari's injury last year and how it affected the playoff run, who's the injury you'd most want to avoid? Rodgers is the free space on the board to have this team in form for a Super Bowl run. My personal pick is Kenny Clark.
No, don't say anything out loud. This is the time when you don't answer this question.
No, I got it.
Because you don't want to jinx it.
Yeah, charity already answered it, and we don't have that kind
of
power.
It's too late.
Again, we literally can't do that. It's not possible.
My pick is Kenny Clark.
I think it might be Kenny. They've played so much worse when he's not on the field. It's kind of insane, and they've been able to weather kind of everything on offense that's been thrown at them. Like, obviously, losing Davante Adams would be bad, but when they've lost Davante for a game in the past, they've been okay most of the time. So, I'll go with Kenny Clark too.
Didn't they have Kylan Hill for that game?
I
have no idea.
Sure.
I'm just trying to think. Kylan Hill was brought up by AJ Dillon as the biggest thirst trap on the team.
Oh,
and that just has me thinking about him today and his destroyed knee.
Of course it does.
Poor Kylan.
Oh man. All right.
That dude, like Matt LaFleur in the post game after Kylan got hurt was like that poor bastard. We had to take him out back and shoot him.
Rashawn Gary.
Escort questions.
Too,
coffee but, addict. Yeah.
Really, really quick. Rashawn Gary would normally be my answer, but if he gets Zadarius back, that helps that a lot. So I think Kenny Clark's the most irreplaceable. So him.
Coffee Addict on Discord. What are your guys' thoughts on Jordan Love now that he's gotten some reps? What would you do with him if Rodgers decides to stick around for another few years? We've been kind of hitting this the whole time.
I'm out on Jordan Love, and I would move forward, assuming he will not be good. So that's me. I'm more pessimistic than most.
Jordan Love is Paul's new Devin Aramashadu. And another thing about Jordan.
Or his new Kevin King. You know, like,
yeah, we talk about Kevin King a lot, too.
C. Hutler asks, my question from last week stands. What's the Achilles heel of the 2021 Packers going into the playoffs?
Special teams still, right? Like, even when they've been better, they've still had some things, little things pop up that could bite them. I don't know. Any different answer from you guys? Run defense?
Nope. Well, we saw them, the Packers experimented with a true 4-3 front against the Lions.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that they were just testing that out for like the event that they had to play against a heavy running
team.
Yeah,
like I think they can deal with the run if they have to. I don't care that much. Special teams, I think, might jump up and bite them.
They bottled Dalvin Cook with a backup quarterback.
They did, but Cleveland is the one to worry about there, who ran with impunity. So, you know, you run into that, might be a problem. Okay. All right, so that wraps it up for us. Before we get out, JR, anything to plug over at the JS?
Well, if anybody sees my car, that would be great. It got stolen.
Jeez.
It got stolen Sunday morning out of my driveway. I don't have a car.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
So, That's been the low light of my week. Then my wife's car wouldn't start the subsequent morning as they tried to get to school. So we went from two cars on early Sunday morning to none in a hurry. We've since resolved some of those issues. But if you see a car driving around Milwaukee with an alpaca sticker on the back windshield, you know, it's probably mine. Probably at this point ditched somewhere. So if you see it in a parking lot in particular, I do imagine I'll get it back at some point in some way, shape, or form. But in the work world, work sphere, we're trying to come up with some Packer stuff. There's I've got a full list of Packers playoff games, which, you know, isn't like revelatory or anything, but I'll look at the Packers playoff performances in the Aaron Rodgers era and Rodgers numbers specifically. Also, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but Lay's Potato Chips is doing this promotion where they take soil from 29 NFL stadiums around the country. They mix it in with the soil that they have on hand in their Texas farms where they're growing potatoes, and you can win bags of potato chips that are fashioned from the potatoes grown in soil from Lambeau Field.
I had no idea.
They were grown in Texas. Extraordinarily weird.
I already have a bag of Lambeau grass seeds. So I don't need Lambeau dirt potatoes.
Well, shit, you grow your own potatoes.
Yeah.
Make your own damn potato chips out of Lambeau soil.
You can set up a roadside stand.
So I grow the grass. The grass will turn it into Lambeau dirt because Lambeau grass. And then I'll remove grass, grow potatoes.
I haven't quite investigated to the level of understanding why. Three teams are not featured. All of them have outdoor stadiums. It's the Broncos, Browns, and Bengals. Maybe they have like deals with other potato chip manufacturers. I have no idea. But you know, like Ford Field, I don't even know. Like, what do you don't get soil out of Ford Field?
Also, Lay's is part of Pepsi, right?
I have no idea. I'm not a corporate guy at all.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure PepsiCo and Frito-Lay are joined.
Could be
because that's Doritos, right? And Doritos is a taco Yum brand.
Maybe. I mean, all of these things are brands I'm familiar with.
Denver and Pepsi are related.
Two or three of those were in Ohio. Maybe the soil's just too bad. It's possible.
That's a good point. Or at altitude. Yeah. That soil doesn't travel or something. Yeah.
The only thing that they can grow in Ohio is depression.
That's right.
Yes. All right. So I've got a story, possibly, I don't even know, coming on stuff like that. But we're just trying to, you know, got the Bucks podcast that came out on Tuesday morning. If you're interested in that, Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast, Point Forward podcast with Jim Ozarski. Trying to find some cool Packers stories because we got a little time here before the next Packers game.
Matt, how about you?
I will be attending my first Packers playoff game.
Hey, nice. Buddy.
Congrats. Yeah. So, reporting is eligible. Sponsor, Appleton Coffee Company. Steve has invited me out to be his guest. He is a season ticket holder. So I will be going to the divisional game. This is both my first playoff game and my first Packers game since I have started creating Packers content.
Wow.
Last time I attended a Packer game was 2016. Was like right when I started. Like, so even before I was officially part of Acme Packing Company.
All right.
I've never been to an NFL playoff game. How about you, Paul?
I have been to several, actually. I was at the "We'll take the ball and we're going to score" game, and I was at the Snow Globe game, and I was at
you got a thing for Seattle apparently.
I was at the Giants game where John Kuhn fumbled and they lost. It was very cold. I was not at the other Giant game. I think I went to one other playoff game that's escaping me. But yeah, I've been to a couple. The Snow Globe game was the best. The weather was absolutely perfect. It wasn't even that cold, and it was a Saturday. And you know, going to a playoff game on a Saturday is awesome because you can do all kinds of fun stuff after it ends, not have to go to work the next day. So that was perfect.
Awesome. Well, I will be putting a poll out on Twitter as to what jersey I should bring. I'm leaning to James Jones.
Interesting.
Weird choice.
Will you be wearing a hoodie?
Yeah, that's why, because I would be wearing a hoodie underneath it. Also, maybe Charles Woodson. I don't know. We'll talk about it. Also, if you would like to send us a voice message instead of...
Somebody did.
Instead of... But you just go to fartmcduty.xyz and you can send us a voice message.
That is true. You can do that. Matt did a thing. That's all I'm going to say about it.
JR looks like he's going to stab me.
Which is the goal that Matt was going for. So that makes sense.
Incredible.
Yeah, really incredible.
Great.
So really just amazing. Make sure you visit fartmcduty.xyz.
Just make sure right. you... Yeah, okay.
Are we done?
We're done. I have... Yeah, I'm writing on... what organizational failure looks like in the NFL about the Bears for Acme Packing Company. Got my Shepherd column up. Go check that out. And otherwise, just enjoy the bye. And yes, on our anchor site, you can leave us audio feedback. Here's the thing, real quick, then we're getting out of here. I get a notification when you leave it, and then I can't find it after that. I don't know where it is on the site. So we got some very nice feedback complimenting all of us and telling us a little bit about Toradol and why it is not prescribed in certain circumstances with broken bones. So thanks for that. But that's that. So let's get out of here.
Broncos, by the way, before we go, the Broncos should hire Joe Judge, and then we would have Judge Judy together.
100%.
That's
correct.
Amazing. That's amazing.
Yes.
Do it for the puns. Do it for the puns.
Do it for the puns. You guys got to do it. All right. That'll do it for us. Enjoy the not game.
Are you feeling nervous? Are you having fun? It's almost over. It's just begun. Don't overthink this. Look in my eye. Don't be scared. Don't be shy. Come on in. The water's fine. We're going to go.